Welcome back to the Chasing Tone Podcast. I am Brian Wampler of Wampler Pedals, and this is, of course, the Chasing Tone Podcast. Today, man, we have a bunch of topics today. Today, I start out talking about some pedal mods I've been thinking about doing. I'd love to hear you guys' thoughts on that as well. My DIY book that's on Amazon that I have temporarily re-released, the old one, to alleviate pricing. I get into that. Talk about the bad review that I had on it and how it made me facepalm myself across the room. And then I talk about a new guitar, a new old guitar I've had for a while. I've rediscovered it, and I fell in love again with it all over. And then, as always, we meander through a million different places in this great episode. A bunch of fun things. We talk about this particular one. So let's get into it right now.
He is in here.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello, Mr. Weiland.
Hi there. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
It's morning, so I'm trying to function as a human being.
Are you ready to talk about tone? Let's do this.
Yes! I love talking tone.
Did we just turn into pro wrestling, like the pro wrestling guitar pedal podcast?
Yes, that's that. You know, there should be. I should do like a radio TV commercial for Chasing Tone, and it would be like, "Do you love talking about guitar tone? I do. Now you can get it every week. You know, something like that. Actually, that's probably really bad.
No, that's fine.
That's a great use of a couple mil, right? You know, some like a Super Bowl commercial. You know, that's what we need to do. Chasing Tone on the Super Bowl.
I think you're right. We've found the solution to all of our problems.
And a good way to waste a gigantic sum of money.
It's not a waste if you enjoy spending it.
That's true. A compulsive shopper? If you like compulsively spending money, that's a good way to do it.
That's one way. Another is to buy guitars. You could do that too.
That's another way. And double amps. Double amps are a great way to spend large sums of cash. What else? Basically, that's it. Very expensive guitars and very expensive amplifiers.
Well, yeah, what you need to, I mean, if you're just looking to just spend money just because, better than a Super Bowl commercial and probably more affordable, you could get yourself like a 59 Burst, a Klon Centaur, and a Dumble, and you'll be set. Right?
You're right. You're absolutely right. That is one way to do it. Not the only way, but that is a way to do it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But, well, so... Did I interrupt you? I'm sorry, Mr. Weiland.
No, you're good. You're good.
Okay. So I have a couple funny things, not funny things, but a couple mildly interesting things to talk about today. The first thing I wanted to go through is I made the mistake of reading through some of the reviews on the DIY book that is on Amazon.
Oh, no.
You know, old How to Modify Effects thing.
Like the book from like how many years ago at this point?
That was like 2006 or 5 or something like that, right? And the only reason why I even like pressed the button to make it live is because I didn't like the idea of people ripping other people off. And like people were selling it for like $2,000 and it's just stupid, right? Mm-hmm. And they're like, that's just ridiculous. I'm just going to turn this on until I get the next book written, which like I'm still working on. So I was reading through the reviews, and this guy was mad because the title was misleading. He was like, it should be called How to Modify Specific Guitar Pedals. I thought I was going to learn how to modify every guitar pedal.
Nope.
So I reply back, I'm like, how in the world, how would that even be possible? Like, more pedals come out per day than I could possibly even buy. So to learn to modify, you know, I mean... How would you teach that? I mean, I'm teaching you the basics along with it, yes. Like, electronics work the same way pretty much. So if you see what I'm doing to this pedal, to this circuit here, and I'm showing you the schematic, then you can kind of say, oh, well, now that I've learned how to read schematics, I can see what we did on the blues driver and apply it to the whatever, you know? So
nope. That's impossible.
It just
that's not like, how logic works.
I I'm stumbling for words because I was dumbfounded that like that was the negative review. You know, like I give up. This is why I stopped selling the damn thing in the first place.
I'm trying to wrap my head around that like this that has to be a person who, you know, basically doesn't pay that close of attention to gear in general, because otherwise there's no way that they would think that with the amount of pedals that are out there these days.
I guess. I mean, I shouldn't read the negative reviews. I shouldn't do that because it's kind of like Facebook drama. It's kind of like plugging into, it's like typing in political posts in the Facebook search bar.
Oh, yes. Yeah? Get sucked right down the rabbit hole. Right down into it.
Oh, my gosh. So, yeah. So, that was fun for me for the weekend. But I also, I don't know, man. I talked to you a couple weeks ago about this. I've been getting this itch to do some, like, wacky mods again. Mm-hmm. You know, like, oh, yeah. I know, I think last year I did some Metalzone stuff where I made it into an EQ pedal and I forget what else. I think I made it into like an overdrive, like just totally different pedals, right? With the idea being that.
Yeah, I remember those.
Yeah, just the idea being that you could take a Metalzone to like the country gig just for something goofy to do, right? I've been thinking like, you know, what else can I do? I can make an EQ pedal into a fuzz. I could, or a distortion, a dirt pedal of some sort. I could do that. You know, like, so I've been thinking of some off the wall things that, that I can do besides, you know, the basic, what everybody does, you know?
I know one thing that you could do that we talked about at one point, which it may have been on like one of the earliest episodes where I started coming on this show, and that is make the entire pedal board full of tube screamers that all do different things.
Yes, that would be great.
I would, you know, like that quite a lot.
In the same way that you know, making a metal zone, different pedal, same type of thing, just different application. So yeah, yes. a TS9 could definitely do that. Yeah, giving me some ideas, man.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we even, I think, went as far as to, like, rip the guts out and make a TS9 that's actually just a delay.
Yeah, I mean, that could be done. I don't think you could modify a TS9 into being a delay without literally putting new circuit boards in there, like you said. Like, you can't change a capacitor and like, hey, what do you know? It's a delay now. You know, so that's, it doesn't quite work that way, but I think that, you know, when you start writing books about DIY, there's two paths you can go. You can go the path of extreme detail, like, and there's a great book called The Art of Electronics. It's like the Bible of analog, and it gets into some digital too, I think, but it's like, it's, you know, it's literally as thick as the Bible, you know, but it tells like everything you'd ever want to know, all the math behind it. It's just a great resource. You know, one of the books I bought a long time ago and just studied like, you know, religiously. Mm-hmm. But so you can go that path, or you can kind of go the path that I took, which is let's take some complicated ideas or semi-complicated ideas and dumb it down so it's consumable by the masses. Because at the end of the day, you know, I was looking at it from my own point of view, which is I just want to play guitar, man. I don't care why that's doing that. I just want to know what to change the part to give it some more bass, you know? Mm-hmm. That, so I kind of like writing more along for that guy more than some sort of thesis for college, you know?
Well, I mean, just, because you kind of are that guy. Really?
Yeah.
You just know a lot of that stuff, the more advanced stuff, out of necessity, not just because you want to.
Right. Yeah. It's like, I don't practice math for fun. You know, I don't like, I'm bored. I think I'll do some algebra. You know, I mean, that's not me at all. I'm much more like, I'm bored. I think I'm going to, like, play some guitar.
Mm-hmm. Some guitars and stuff, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, so, yeah, so I guess I'm, and I kind of approach our products that way, too. And I've talked about it before, like, I create products that I want. You know?
I know?
So it's like, that's what I do's, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's kind of the same way that I approach things. You know, whenever there's, you know, projects that I'm doing with another builder or something, it usually comes from like a, not always, but usually it comes from a, yeah, I kind of want this. Can we do that? Mm-hmm. And they're like, yes mm-hmm. or no, you know, type of situation. Mm-hmm. So I have a lot of harebrained ideas that maybe wouldn't do very well to sell, like, you know, a whole bunch of them, like 1,000. Mm-hmm. But, you know, to sell, you know, 10 to 50 of them, yeah, it's great type of thing.
So let me ask you a question. So on the Tone Mob podcast, your podcast, mm-hmm. you have a lot of interviews with a lot of interesting people. Did you create that because that's what you, like, you wished that kind of podcast existed and so you just created it?
Yeah, that actually was part of it. It was like, first of all, there's just, at the time, there just wasn't that many guitar podcasts. And I was like, how come no one is talking to these people in this form? Like, it seems pretty straightforward. Like, everybody mm-hmm. that's a super gear nerd wants to know more about these people and why they do what they do.
Right.
So I guess I'll call somebody up and see what happens.
I'll call someone and hope they answer.
Yeah, exactly. My first episode was with Ryan from McCaffrey Audio. And
yeah, I know Ryan. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I recorded that. It's funny. Like, everybody knows we record these, you know, remotely. I recorded that one literally up in the hills of Forest Park in Portland, like up in the woods, basically.
So there's like eagles flying overhead, and you're go, go, go.
Yeah, this lady like literally like walked by with her dog, and like looked at me weird because I was just sitting there talking. But I was literally up in the woods, like in Forest Park, just like, oh, this is cool. This is great. I'm recording a podcast. I've never recorded a podcast before. I don't even know if I know what I'm doing. And, you know, however many episodes later, here we are.
So do you find that, I mean, was it easier for you to interview people? Because that's kind of an art in itself, you know, like being a good interviewer is... That's kind of a talent, I think.
I didn't really think about it at the time, but I've kind of realized that more through doing it as I've gotten a little bit better. I think I've gotten better at it anyway. At least I'm a lot more comfortable than I used to be.
Well, in my opinion, mildly better, you know.
Mildly, yeah.
I'm just teasing.
But I mean, it's something I think that's came natural to me for the most part. I've always been a chatty person and a people oriented person. I like people. I like meeting new people and I like talking to people. So it came pretty natural to me. I used to be a little bit more regimented with my interviews. I would have somewhat of a structure, and now I have a few base questions that I really try to get in there. But for the most part, I like to just roll and let it, just kind of let it happen. I don't know whose style that is, but I'm sure I know I'm not the first guy.
So what do you do in the situation whenever you have someone that is fairly introverted and they don't talk that much? You know, like you ask them a question, they give you one sentence answer.
That can definitely be a challenge. I usually, it hasn't happened as often as you would think, honestly. But it has happened a few times, and I feel like I'm able to kind of read that situation and coax an answer out of them, like a little bit, like, you know, like, what kind of guitars do you like? I like Telecasters. Well, what is it, you know, I know enough right. about the subject that I can go in further and be like, well, yeah, what kind of pickups do you like? You know, do you like, the, you know, blah, 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 blah. Like if it was something that I knew nothing about or had no interest in, it might be a lot more difficult. Like if I had to interview, I don't know. I have no idea. Some like
Justin Bieber.
Yeah. If I had interviewed Justin Bieber and ask him, you know, like I'd ask him about his pants, I have a feeling that would get real boring real quick because I don't care about Justin Bieber's pants. So
this is the Bieber Clan podcast. You got Blake Weiland as your host. If Justin, the Tote Mob thing doesn't work out, you always got that to fall back on.
Yeah. Yeah. That'll go great. I think I'll have, you know, millions of adoring teenage girl fans. That's just what I want. No.
Yeah, maybe don't go down that path.
No, please.
So no. I to kind of segue a little bit different direction here. I fell in love with an old guitar of mine.
Oh, one you've had laying around?
Yeah. Yeah, one that's been in a case. And I had some, I had it set back up because, you know, just from sitting in a case, the fret, the wood had moved and, you know, all that good stuff. Mm-hmm. So I had local luthier Bill Stoltz here in town in Martinsville. I had him reset it up and mess with the frets and just make it play good, right? Mm-hmm. And I've been loving that thing lately. And you're probably not going to believe what it is because I don't think they're too popular.
You're being vague. What is it?
The Valley Arts Brent Mason Telecaster style guitar. I don't even think it is a brand anymore. I think it was once owned by Gibson, I believe. But, and this has been, let's say 10 years ago, before Brent Mason had the Paul Reed Smith stuff, he had a deal with Valley Arts and they took his gray Telecaster and like completely disassembled it and made a model that was exactly, not exactly, but 99% the same.
Okay.
And so, you know, it's gray. It's like, it looks like primer gray, so it's not like a beautiful guitar. And it doesn't, like I've played Brent's guitar and I've played this. I don't think they honestly sound or play the same at all. But it's got its own unique thing to it. It's almost like if you take the qualities of a good Les Paul and kind of combine it with some Telecaster-ish type of stuff, it's pretty cool. I mean, like, it's just got this really unique vibe to it. I don't even know how to explain it, but it's big and heavy, and it's thick, much thicker than a normal Telecaster.
Interesting.
Where it's not as spanky. So it's very unique. And because I was actually thinking about getting rid of it, because it's just, I'm like, this thing's been sitting in the case forever. I don't want to collect guitars. You know what I mean? Like somebody needs to play this. And so that's why I originally had it set back up and I got it back and I'm like, I can't sell this, man. I'm loving this guitar.
I know the feeling. So tell me more about it. What's it got? I don't know what Brent's gray Telecaster looks like. So what's in this pickup wise and all that stuff?
Okay, so I forget. I know the single coil is a Seymour Duncan something or other. You're going to have to Google it. the middle pickup is some sort of Stratocaster Seymour Duncan thing. And there's a humbucker in the neck. Really descriptive. I know that like everybody is like saying, Brian, what kind of pickup is it? I don't recall. I really don't. Like it's a SD-1-3000.
Okay.
You know.
All right. Okay.
No, but I mean, it's the same pickups that Brent has in his personal gray Telecaster, right? So it's those same pickups, whatever they are. The thing it doesn't have, well, I mean, I mentioned it doesn't, I don't think they sound the same, but let me look at it here. Hang on. Yeah. Okay. So in Brent's personal guitar, it's primer gray and I forget why. I think someone actually stripped it at one time before he got it and painted it like auto primer gray. Mm-hmm. And then he bought it like a pawn shop or something years ago and just played it that way. and never, you know, he never wanted to get it repainted because he liked the way it sounded, and he was afraid, you know, changing the paint might affect the sound a little bit. Mm-hmm. And so he just played it like that. So his looks all beat up. It's nasty and gnarly and got, you know, it's true relicking. You know, it's got years and years of being played, you know, sweat mm-hmm. and grease and shame, you know, all wrapped up into one. Where this guitar is just like, it's a professionally gray painted guitar. So it doesn't have that cool factor to it, you know? Mm-hmm. What they should have had is a guy like Charles Whitfield, who, in my opinion, is one of the best at relicking, to have him actually relic those guitars, or at least teach them how to. I don't know. But I mean, it's missing that vibe, you know? It's just, it's kind of too pretty.
Yeah, I know.
You know what
I
should do?
Yeah,
I should. So I live on a gravel road. Maybe I should like drag it behind the golf cart down the gravel road and relic it.
Yeah, that's totally natural, and you won't damage anything further than you want to at all. There's no chance.
Oh, I know. Yeah, yeah. That's my proprietary relicking. So, yeah, that's what I'm gonna start doing.
Is that going to be your next business venture? Like, send Brian your guitars for relicking.
Yes, that's exactly what I'm going to do. And you too can have the been dragged behind a golf cart going 20 miles an hour down a gravel road with lots of chuck hole look.
That's not
a very catchy title. I know. It's a working title, but
I got it.
Yeah.
Brian, I've got it. I know what you can call this line. So now bear with me here. Bear with me. Okay. Brace yourself. Road worn.
Oh man. you're the marketing genius.
Is that how Fender did it?
I think so. I think they did. They may not have drove. I graduated school, you can tell. Mm-hmm. They may not have had a golf cart that they used. They may have had, like, I don't know, a car.
Right. You know? But they did it using similar methods, I'm sure.
I would think so, because I'm pretty sure that's the best way to relic stuff. Is drag it
is.
Behind you on a gravel road. You know?
Speaking of relic, and on a more serious note, we could go on this subject for hours, but I wanted to mention something. You mentioned, like, yeah, Charles does a really great job at relicking, and he does. I have, you know, when I went to Nashville, I did get to experience some of that in person, which was very nice. Mm-hmm. But another one I want to give a quick shout out to that a lot of people already know about, but I just want to talk about is the Danocaster guitars. That guy does crazy relic jobs.
Really?
Yeah. I haven't
looked at him that close.
Yeah, I was at the Tacoma Guitar Show, like, well, I don't know, 9 months ago, whatever it was. And Mike from Mike and Mike's Guitar Bar was grilling me on, you know, he's a vintage guitar nut, so he knows everything about all these vintage Fenders and things that I have no clue about. But he was like, which one of these is a real vintage guitar and which one of these has been relicked? And I'm looking at like three different guitars. And I was wrong two out of the three times. They were both Danocaster relic jobs. They're on Fender guitars, so they have the same logo and everything. But there were relic jobs that he had done. And I don't know how far he took it, if it was like a complete refin and then he relicked it, or I don't know what his process looks like. But I guessed wrong on both accounts. The real relicked, like, legitimate vintage guitar was not the one I picked. So for whatever that's
worth. He must be really good. I mean, it's when someone does it at that level, I mean, that's like such an artistic thing. You know what I mean? And it's mm-hmm. it's, and I know that everyone has like their proprietary secrets of how they relic. And it's just, I always think, like, how many guitars did you screw up trying to perfect the process? You know? And
oh,
are they for sale?
That's a good point.
You know what I mean? Like, oh, this looks terrible. I can't sell this. Like, I'll buy it. For the right price, if you want to get rid of it, you know.
Well, yeah, and then then you see some really bad ones that people like try to sell on Craigslist and stuff, like, and it's like that just looks like you literally just took a piece of like sandpaper and just stuck it on there.
Yeah, they just stuck a belt sander to the back of it. And like, all right, done, relict.
And now I charge $700 more than what it actually costs. Like, no.
Exactly.
But then apparently that is such a rampant thing. Like, people do it all the time that somebody's buying them. It has to be.
Wait, someone's buying the bad relic jobs, you mean?
Yes. Yeah, so, I mean, you just see them all the time. So somebody has to be buying the bad relic jobs. I just don't know who that guy is.
I don't know. I mean, maybe no one buys it and they lower the price enough where it's just worth it. You're like, all right, well, I guess I'll take this beat up Telecaster with, you know, that looks like someone's taking a belt sander to it for $100.
That could be. You know? Maybe they just finally get tired of it.
Maybe like, I just got to get rid of this thing because it's ugly. I took a belt sander to it. Nobody wants it. You know, I don't know. Mm-hmm. But relicking isn't my job. I'm not a relicker.
When are we going to get those Wampler relicked pedals?
You know, I know the answer to that is never, but never say never, I guess. Not right now. But there have been, like, Petty John does that, right?
Well, that's true. They're kind of, yeah, they kind of have a patina to them. That's true. I forgot about that. And they look really nice.
Yeah, there's some companies that are doing that, and they look cool. It's not us, you know?
No, that's a good point. I kind of forget that is a thing. I've joked about it before, but Petty John stuff looks and sounds fantastic. So,
yeah.
Good point.
Yeah. I don't know how you would do that at the scale that we build things, you know? I mean, it's because relicking, it's not like you're painting that on, you know what I mean? Like, you're making it look nice, and then you're doing things to that one box to try to make it look old, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's, I don't know how you would do that thousands of times per month. Like, they're just, that would be very hard to scale. It would be, you'd have to sell it for, you know, $500 a pedal or something crazy to even make money off of it. Just because of the labor involved.
Yeah, that's not something. I mean, there's already a ton of labor involved. So then to take it to that next level, it's like, yeah, how are you gonna pencil that one out without having a crazy price point? And I don't know that most people would buy, you know,
right,
thousands of. Yeah, I don't see that being a something that you're gonna move thousands of.
Right,
move
and
a
that's
lot,
why I say.
But,
and that's why I say, you know, that may be good for someone out there who's wanting to start their pedal company or whatever. But for us, like where we are, I don't see us doing anything like that because it's just not, it's not who we are and it's not what our overall goal is. You know, our overall goal is to reach as many people as possible and bring the good news of good tone to them. But, I don't see relicking as part of that for us.
I thought your whole overall goal was global domination and one world government, but, you know, that's just what I thought. Am I wrong? I got the mission statement all backwards?
Globally dominate and one world government, the government of tone.
We will regulate tone with an iron fist.
A pleasant allegiance to the world domination of guitar tone. Yeah, I don't, no, not really looking for any sort of political disturbance at all. Not really, not back. Much
sure?
More into, I kind of like diodes and capacitors and resistors and stuff. You know, maybe global breadboard domination. How about that?
I don't know. I have everything all backwards. This whole time I was working towards one goal and you're working towards another one. And now I feel a division in the podcast.
I'm sorry to, I'm sorry to break it to you that way. You know, I know that's, you've had this idea of who I am in your head for so long and I've kind of just dismantled it, you know, in 2 minutes.
You did. I mean, how are we supposed to bring about new world order of tone or whatever? I don't know.
Surface mount technology.
Yeah. Well, SMT, it's good stuff.
Yeah. Well, it's going to have to be because all the through-hole stuff is being obsoleted. So, yeah.
Yeah, I know. It's a weird thing because, I mean, there's still you know, millions of through-hole components. But, like, at what point are the, you know, the companies that manufacture those just going to say, ah, forget it, it's not worth it?
Well, a lot of them are. I mean, you can't find, you just simply can't find everything you need in through-hole, like, at volume. You know what I mean? So, like, for example, we were working on a project we needed, and this has just happened recently. We needed a very specific JFET, okay? Mm-hmm. It's no longer made. Like, we can find, you know, 50 of them here, 20 of them here. We need 10,000. We cannot get it. We can't get it direct from the manufacturer. We can't find a supplier. It's just not available. So we had to scrap the whole project because that particular JFET wasn't available at all in through hole or surface mount. It's just gone.
Weird. That's weird to think about.
That's just the way it is. I mean, because you got to think with guitar stuff, like electronics, we're dropping a bucket to the electronics industry. You know what I mean? Like they could care less what, if we need those JFETs or not, because they know that DSP is the future. You know what I mean? And so they're moving forward with, like, bigger and better DSP designs overall, you know? Mm-hmm. They're not, you know, they could care less. They're not looking to satisfy the needs in one little tiny itty-bitty niche around guitar pedal tone nerds, you know, like me and you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't care. I could tell them all day long, but those FETs sound better. You got to make them, you know?
And
they don't care.
Like, don't care.
You're right. They're like, unless you're going to buy 100 million of them this month, we're not doing it.
Mm-hmm. So, like, okay, so here's a question then. How often are you able to, cause I know this, you're definitely not the first guy I've talked to that has that same exact story. Sometimes some people can rework the design to some point and use something else that's more available and then get it, you know, get the tone they were shooting for with the original thing. How have you been able to or needed to do that very often?
Yeah, it happens sometimes, but in this very specific instance, that particular part and what it was doing in the circuit was just so critical that the only other way to do it is to simulate it digitally. That's the only other way to do it, because I'm trying not to give away the project.
Right.
Because, you know, so that part is doing something very specific, and if you put any other type of FET in there, it doesn't do it the same way.
I understand. I get it.
So, yeah, that creates problems. It really does. You know? So, yeah, I mean, that's to answer your question. There's substitutions, quote unquote, that we do all the time. You know, it may be that with this brand of 1 microfarad capacitors aren't available. All right. Okay. So let's go to this other brand. It's just the same. You know, sounds the same. There's no difference in quality. You know, sometimes it's actually more expensive doing it that way. And, I mean, that stuff doesn't happen very often, but with any manufacturing, that stuff does happen where you just, like, the parts aren't available right now, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's also why you see, well, I mean, you know this, I'm sure everybody knows this. That's why you see a lot of, like, especially fuzz companies, they'll do limited runs of, like, germanium fuzzes. It's because they can't buy any more of those right now until find another batch somewhere, you know?
Yeah. That, I mean, and then that's going to be really interesting. Like, there were so many of those transistors produced back in the day, like millions and millions of them. But it will be interesting to see in, like, you know, I don't know, 15, 20 years, since, you know, we're still eating into that same supply, like, what that's going to look like. Like, we say they're hard to find now. I mean, think about trying to find black glass stuff in, like, 15 years.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, those fuzzes will be $900. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, really, I bet you the prices of that stuff in the future is going to go way up. It'll be like Klon prices, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because of availability.
Yeah, just because of availability. Same reason as the Klon, just limited amount, and a lot of people wanted them, You know, it's not, we've talked about this before. It's not like Bill Finnegan was like, I'm going to sell this for $3,000. You know, it was people wanted the clones and they weren't on the market. So they're willing to pay more.
Yeah, that was totally. Yeah, that wasn't his deal at all. That was the used market dictating that.
Right.
I think some people forget that. They're like, why is he selling this pedal for $3,000? And it's like, no, he's not. He didn't. He sold it for like $250 or $300 in the 90s. You know, like that's what he was selling it for. So, which I mean was expensive for a pedal, but not $3,000 expensive. So
right. Well, I mean, if you can get, I mean, whether you agree with capitalism or not, that kind of is capitalism, you know? I get like Howard Dumble, for example. He doesn't have to make amps every day. He can make a couple a year for people who have the money and are willing to spend X amount of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, you can complain about all you want, but the market dictates it. You know?
Yeah.
The market is saying there's a person that's willing to spend that amount of money for that particular item. You know?
Wouldn't it be cool to only have to build like 3 amps a year?
That'd be awesome. You know, that would be so awesome. So I could go out and play with my goats all day long if I could do that. You know, cuddle up to them and kiss them and hug them and rub their little horned ears. You know,
this just got weird.
I'm teasing. I wouldn't do that every day.
just the days that end in Y.
Right. Yeah, pretty much. Just the sunny days.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, you don't want to go out in the mud. That's silly. Well, then you bring the goats in the house anyway.
Some do. Some do have little bitty goats as pets inside the house. We don't.
House goats?
I've seen it. You got to remember, I live in a very rural part of Indiana. We're in the woods, man. We're in the backcountry.
I didn't know house goats was a thing.
Yes. Oh, yes. And pigs. People like to have pigs as pets as well.
I have seen that. Mm-hmm. I don't know why they want to get so attached to their bacon before they eat it, but that's just me.
I do. This is the honest truth. I actually know someone who used to have their horse inside their house. They would bring the horse inside the house. Yeah. Yeah.
Like a full-grown horse?
Like, I was in my 20s, so I'm trying to think back. And, like, I didn't see it, but they told me they did. It was one of those type of deals. I think the horse was younger, and they would just bring it inside so, like, it didn't get cold and stuff. But still, you're bringing a horse inside your house, dude, you know?
I would think that would wreak havoc on your floor. Just the hooves, they're big, and I've seen what they do to a field. Like, I can't imagine what that would do to your carpet.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's – so I got to be really careful here. I don't think that was that much of a concern for these particular people.
I think I follow you, Mr. Wampler. I believe I do. I know similar folks, or have met similar folks, I should say.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not judging. Whatever floats your boat, man. You do you. But that's not really what I would do. That seemed like a bad idea.
Not my first choice. Yeah, I understand.
You know, you're in line at the pet store, and you're like, cute little puppy dog, quarter horse. Which one do I want? Huh? You know.
Well, I don't know. To each his own.
Yes. Exactly.
I feel like that's a good place to wrap up on this week.
That's a very good place to wrap up. Yes. All right. And until next week, my friend.
Yes. Hashtag to each his own. Later.
See you. So thank you so much for listening. I really appreciate it. If you have any comments or questions, you can email me directly at podcast@wamplerpedals.com. You can email Blake directly at info@tonemob.com. Also, it would really help us out if you leave an iTunes review, even if you've left one in the past, like an older one. I know the show has changed dramatically over the past few years. It'd be great to have a new review. If you like it, if you don't like it, hope you do like it. If you don't like it, I hope you let me know what you don't like about it so we can change it. And if you want to check out any of the other episodes, you can always go to ChasingTonePodcast.com. That'll take you to our website page with all the episodes, all the social media links, the Facebooks and the Instagrams and the Snapchats and all that good stuff. Same thing with ToneMob.com. That will get you to everything Blake does, as well as all his social media links as well. So thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.